it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And hello once again. This is episode number 8 of the Hockey News on the Cue, brought to you by BetMGM. My name is Will McLaren, and as always, with me is Jamie Tozer. I shouldn't say with me as always, because he was unavailable last week, another trip to the West Coast. He's not at home now either, but he is in the general vicinity. You're coming to us live from Moncton tonight, aren't you, Jamie?
Yep, we're getting closer to home in Moncton here tonight. Starting to feel like the World Juniors a little bit here. Starting to see a lot of signage and a little bit more hype around the city than what we've seen the past few weeks. So that's cool to see. Starting to see it a little bit in Halifax as well, and It's you can start to feel it coming, especially with the camp roster coming out. But my thanks to Pat for stepping up last week in a bit of a jam for me. So I appreciate that. But I've done lots of interviews with Pat, so I think he owed me this solid at least this one time.
I said that Pat owed me as well. I don't even know what for, and it's probably not true. I probably owe him several things, but we'll just go with it. Know a guy for 20 years, it all just kind of blends together. But no, thanks, Pat, for stepping in, and I know we're going to hear from him for sure before the season's out once again. But yeah, you're talking about the World Juniors, Jamie, and you are right. The buzz is starting to get a little louder down here in Halifax, especially with the announcement of the selection camp roster, which came out just the other day. And, for the Cue, it's definitely a banner year. And it's kind of funny, you know, you think about it, Jamie. You know, this isn't a top-heavy year for prospects. There's no, you know, guy with that wow factor, so to speak. There is no McKinnon. There is no Crosby. There's nobody like that per se in the league this year. But we still got 9 guys from the Cue going to camp.
Yeah, that's great to see especially, you know, just kind of funny how it lines up with the year that Cue cities are hosting it. And we were talking a little bit before the show that the 2017 team in Montreal also had quite a strong Cue contingent. So funny how it just lines up like that. Yeah, like you said, like there's no McKinnon, there's no real, you know, Huberto Crosby type player on this team, but 9 guys, and there's some guys who will probably play some pretty prominent roles, even though a few of them will probably be more role guys. They're going to play important roles. So will be cool to see them, especially I know some of the roster projections have, you know, the third or fourth line being Cue guys. And, you know, the thought of, you know, having somewhat local guys playing like an energy line type in a building that's going to be electric, like in Halifax. That'll be fun to see.
Yeah, definitely. You know, of course, Halifax has one player invited to the surprise of probably nobody. Jordan Dumais, if you've been following the league, you've heard his name week in, week out on this podcast. Flip on the Cue website. His face and name is on there all the time. He's leading the league in scoring by a wide margin and could have the opportunity to be playing for Team Canada's own backyard. And then you get the returnees as well. You know, Nathan Gauthier coming down from the Quebec Rempart, Riley Kidney, who was that energy line guy, as you mentioned, Jamie, in the summer tournament in Edmonton from Acadie Bathurst, and his fellow Montreal Canadiens prospect, Joshua Waugh, another returnee by way of the Sherbrooke Phoenix. So, you know, probably a safe bet that the 3 returnees find a spot in Gauthier, Kidney, and Waugh. Anybody else amongst the rest of the crew there that you may think have an inside track on a spot, maybe even a sleeper pick amongst that group?
Yeah, you know, I think I look at these Cue guys. I think they're gonna be in tough to find top 6 roles. I think Waugh maybe has a chance to get in there, but I think the rest they're gonna struggle. And then that's not a knock on them. It's just the guys above them are just so good. And the Canadian forward group is extremely deep, especially if the NHL guys come back, which seems to be the expected assumption that those guys will come back. So a couple of guys that I do think will be on the team. I think Bull Duke and Dean, I think they'll make it just because I think when you think of this team, they're probably better suited for third, fourth lines. And that's probably where they're going to slide in. So I think that they probably have a good shot. Now, Dume, I think he has to have a good camp. I think he has to come to camp and show that he can obviously put up the numbers that he's put up in the queue this year. But I think he's got to show that he can play a bit of another role too, whether that be defensively or another job, because I think he's going to be in tough to find a top six role just because Canada is so deep.
Yeah, the only caveat that I guess I'd say to that is, first of all, you know, in comparison with the other guys from the queue, you know, Dume would be a top six guy amongst, you know, that roster. Sure. You know, the forwards, you mentioned Zach Bolduc, Zach Dean, and of course, Gauthier Kidney-Waugh, who we've already spoken about. You know, he very much fits in as, you know, if you're talking about that group in isolation, he's a top liner for sure, or at the very least a top six. Maybe the one thing that helps him is, you know, the fact that there's not a lot of talent coming in from the OHL this year. There's only five guys invited from the O. Of course, he is going to have to contend with the NHL contingent, including Shane Wright, who's expected to be in camp, of course, as well. So it is going to be tough from that standpoint. But maybe just, you know, the high number of Quebec League players that are going to this camp, maybe in a way it does help him. We're only going to find out. But I do agree with you, Jamie. He is the sort of guy who I think if he's going to slot in, he almost has to slot in as the top six. That's his game. And, yep. You know, I'm sure he'll be giving, you know, it maybe in some ways it will be a spot for him to lose. But it's going to take a persuasive camp, much like it's going to take a persuasive camp for virtually everybody. You know, Dean and Bolduc, guys that can slide up and down the lineup very easily. Dean, you know, I'd look at him. Remember, he was invited to the 2021 camp and, you know, he had to deal with some injuries here and the ensuing seasons that kept him off the team Canada radar as a result. You know, he's an energy guy through and through. You know, we talked to Louis Robitaille at the beginning of the year, and that's what he does while also putting up the points. And of course, rounding things out, pair of defensemen in Evan Noss, also from Quebec, and Tyson Hines from Sherbrooke, William Russo, the goaltender from the Quebec Rempart, and Stéphane Julien as well, the Sherbrooke Phoenix head coach, is on the team as an assistant coach. You know, goaltending, probably a bit of a crapshoot this year based on everything we're hearing. You know, Russo's had the stats in the queue behind a very strong Quebec team. Be interesting again to see how he fares against his competition from across the country as they battle for those two spots.
Yeah, I've seen some roster projections that have him as the number two goalie. I've seen him as the number three goalie. I've seen him completely left off the roster. So I think the goaltending is really, it's kind of all over the place. And from what I've read, it's kind of like this for every country. So it could be an interesting tournament from a goaltending perspective. Could see some high scoring games.
Yeah, for sure. So it's all going to pare down here in the coming weeks. Tournament starts in Halifax and in Moncton on Boxing Day. And it'll be great to have some all-world talent within our own backyards, for sure, but also on the stage that is home to the Q Day and game in, game out as well. You got a thought? You got an opinion? Do you think there's anybody on that list that maybe is more of a dark horse than we thought? Send us a comment. Send us a question. Our Twitter addresses are in the handles below. Feel free to make any comments, and we will make sure they get on the air in our mailbag segment. So on top of the news coming out of Team Canada, there's also news from within the queue. And this is the 2023 Hall of Fame class announced. Two players and a builder, although the builder is a former player as well in the queue, making their way into the shrine. If Dave Ezard, Cornwall Royals star defenseman from the late 70s and early 80s, won a Memorial Cup in 1980. as well. Still the only defenseman to register back-to-back 35-goal seasons in the queue, which kind of struck me odd as a stat, Jamie, just when you think of the prolific history of offensive defensemen that came out of this league, that nobody else has ever done that.
That is surprising. And like even in recent history, that seems like a record that even today could possibly be broken.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he did have a 40-goal season. That was the record for years and years. It was broken first by Derek Walzer and then Marc-Andre Bergeron, who spent copious amounts of time in the NHL as a power play specialist. Then the record's now 42. And it's just surprising, you know, given especially in the high-scoring 70s in the queue, that nobody else has ever managed to do that. Seems like a doable thing if the right guy comes along. Yeah, and there's Stéphane Richer. You know, Stéphane Richer, people of a certain vintage, I remember Richer very well from his NHL days, a pair of Stanley Cups, one with the Habs in 86, then with the Devils in 95. But before that, he was a star in the queue, Granby and Chicoutimi. Teammate of Patrick Waugh and Granby, for that matter, won a Calder Cup in 1985, won a gold medal with Team Canada. And probably when he was playing, Jamie, one of the more, I say, confounding or polarizing players out there. And then we kind of found out after he retired, you know, he was battling a lot of heavy stuff. And, you know, he's been very public about that in his retirement.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, you kind of see that more and more with some players recently retiring, too. I'm starting to see that kind of caring about more of their personal battles and how it kind of impacted their play over the years.
Yeah, I know a number of people who have interacted with Stéphane Richer, particularly post-playing career, and they always come back to the same thing. You know, very well-spoken guy, very open about the struggles that he's had. And he's a guy that just wants to make a difference. So, you know, a Hall of Fame player, to be sure, in the queue, but, you know, a Hall of Fame person as well. And anytime you can have that opportunity to have somebody of that caliber as a human being reach the pinnacle of personal achievement in the Quebec League or any league, you know, it's a great thing to see.
Yeah, and, you know, just back to the hockey side too. I mean, look at that run he had in 1985-86. Like, wow, that is advanced to the 85 President Cup final, one gold medal at the World Juniors, 85 Calder Cup champion, and 86 Stanley Cup champion. That's pretty wild. That's almost a calendar year.
That's a lot of success in a short period of time, to be sure. Like I say, went to the Memorial Cup that spring of 85, he went out to the President Cup final, I should say, in 85, lost to Claude Lemieux and Verdun back in 85. And once his Q career was over, he immediately joined his old buddy Patrick, went to Sherbrooke, and that team actually made the playoffs on the last night of the season, the regular season, then ended up turning around and winning a Stanley Cup. Patrick Waugh was a third string goaltender. He ended up being put into net in the net on an emergency basis, and the rest, as they say, is history. But no, great work, great accomplishment for both Azar, the late Dave Azar, and Stéphane Richer. And then there's another more recent name, at least if you follow the NHL coaching ranks. That's Alain Vigneault. Again, as we've mentioned, a player in his own right in the queue and in the NHL in the late 70s and then the early 80s. But at a very young age, came back to the queue as a coach and was successful almost right away, particularly with the Hull Olympic.
Yeah, and, you know, Vigneault, he came in, or he left the queue a little bit before I really got into it hardcore. But, you know, I've always seemed to be such a well-known as kind of like the player's coach and seemed to be so well-liked by his players. So, you know, not really surprising to see him have such a long coaching career.
Yeah, no, definitely some staying power there. I remember him personally, the first year that I really followed the league, he was a mid-season replacement with the old Beauport Harfang, which they're now the Quebec Car, actually. Yeah, and rest in peace. ends up taking that team to the final with guys like Eric Daze and Christian Laflamme and Marty Biron back in those days. And, he was kind of just in between stints in the NHL. He was an assistant with Ottawa, went on a short period of time later to take over the head coaching job with Montreal Canadiens. But always came across as a pretty cerebral guy, but also just a nice guy. Yeah. You know, he wasn't, you know, he was never snappy with the media. He wasn't one of these like Tortorella type guys who it's like you don't even really want to ask him a question most of the time. He seemed to be a pretty even keel guy, and he got results. You know, first in the queue, won that President Cup with Hull in 88, went to the final with Beauport, as we mentioned, and laid the groundwork the first couple seasons with PEI Rocket as well. And, you know, he's had success in the NHL as well. So congrats to him as well. Now that class of 2023, they're going to be inducted next year, of course, but they're also going in with class 2022 because, of course, in COVID and everything that we've been battling as a society, that class actually hasn't been formally inducted. So along with the late Dave Izar, as well as Alain Vigneault and Stéphane Richer, they're going to be joined at that ceremony by Simon Gamache, Clem Jodoin, Roberto Luongo, Stéphane Robida, and Rick Vive. So Jamie, you know, even following the league now for what, about 15 years or so, I've got somewhere between, it's not important how many years I've been following the league. who are some of the guys? I mean, there's going to be your obvious guys, the Crosbys, obviously. They're a lock as soon as they retire. But is there anybody else that really strikes you as a good candidate from the time period you've watched the league that you would expect to see go into the Q's Hall of Fame in the coming years?
Well, some of the ones who maybe aren't that obvious, I think someone who just very recently retired, who we've talked about on the show before, Matthew Perreault, I kind of wonder about him. He had excellent numbers, had a pretty good NHL career as well. Marc-Andre Fleury, who I assume would probably be a lock. Claude Giroux is another one. I think he'll probably be retiring in the next few years. And then Brad Marchand too. Probably an NHL Hall of Famer, so I would assume probably a lock to be in the Q Hall of Fame. He's had such an interesting, I'm fascinated by his career. He has had such a fascinating career, and it's hard to believe watching him in junior how many people would have thought he'd be an NHL Hall of Famer at that point.
So Brad Marchand's first 2 years in the Q, he played in Moncton when I lived in Moncton, was around the team. My first year as a freelancer was his second year in Moncton just before he got traded to Val-d'Or. And keep in mind, this is a guy with, two President Cup finals under his belt. He has a President Cup title with the 06 Wildcats, went to a Memorial Cup final with them. He came to camp in 2004 as a 16-year-old. He was second round pick. He was actually a line mate of James Shepard in the under 18 ranks the year before, and Shepard got the lion's share of the attention. But Brad Marchand, from all accounts, came into camp with the Moncton Wildcats at 16 on a veteran Moncton team and said, I'm taking a spot from someone. And he actually did take a spot from someone. Who was a fourth liner the year before. Brad started out, you know, in the bottom six, worked his way up. And you just saw that determination. You know, say what you will about Brad Marchand, and you can say a lot about him.
A few things, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few words that come to mind, some of which are not fit for this podcast, unfortunately. At the end of the day, he's just a guy who's driven to succeed. He has made people around him better for years and years, and he's kind of the blasting cap. Like, he's the guy who takes the attention away from guys who are just looking to, you know, do their job. Yep. You know, everybody marvels at, you know, Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak with the Bruins, and for good reason. Bergeron's another guy who will be in the Hall of Fame someday, in the NHL Hall of Fame for sure, or the Hockey Hall of Fame. But you know what? It's probably been a little bit easier for guys like them to, you know, go about their game, you know, season in, season out, with that lightning rod playing on the same line as them. And, you know, it's something that doesn't show up in the score sheet. And Brad Marchand has his share of points and goals and whatnot. And the statistics will get him into the Hall of Fame. But it's what he's done, you know, as a member of that team that has probably helped, for better or worse, helped the entire organization. You know, it can't be discounted. So, you know, I agree with you. He's definitely a strong candidate for a Hall of Famer. You know, I think, you know, a guy like Nathan MacKinnon, maybe a Jonathan Drouin, down here. Very strong candidates.
Yeah. Having them going together would be cool too.
Very much so. Yeah. And a guy who we're about to talk about in greater detail about 2 minutes from now, Connor Garland.
Yep. You know,
I think it'd be hard to leave him out back-to-back scoring titles. So be interesting in the years to come. But for now, congrats to everybody who is going in, both the delayed class of 2022 and the class of 2023 just announced last week. That now takes us to our NHL team profile. We're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. There's not a lot to talk about in terms of quantity, Jamie, but there is certainly some quality. There's nobody drafted in the QMJHL. Nobody in the QMJHL right now drafted by the Canucks. They actually haven't drafted anybody from the Q since 2015. One of those guys is in the AHL system at Abbotsford, and that's defenseman Guillaume Brisebois, along with winger Vincent Arsenault. But before going any further, you were actually in that rink not too long ago, were you not, in Abbotsford?
Yes, I'm so dedicated to this podcast that I flew all the way to Abbotsford on my own dime to do some scouting for the show. So
this is why we had to get Pat last minute. Yeah. We had to go to Abbotsford.
Yeah, exactly.
These are the sacrifices we make here on Hockey News and the Queue.
But it's funny we're talking about this because one of the guys who really stood out in the game I saw, which was an excellent game, by the way, Abbotsford and Laval on Saturday night, one of the better games I've seen in a long time. Vincent Arsenault really stood out. He was hitting everybody, so he still plays the same way after 10 years after he left the queue, which is not that surprising. But, you know, you could tell that he was visibly larger than a lot of the players on the ice, and that the role that he plays fits so well into the AHL style. So, you know, and he had that style in the queue, that grinding type forward that was so effective. And I was actually curious. I looked up his numbers in the queue. Four of his five seasons, he had over 100 penalty minutes. And that seemed like a lot for today's player. And I actually looked it up. Only one player in the queue last season had over 100 penalty minutes. So we're kind of seeing a decline in those types of players.
Yeah, definitely. The physicality isn't quite what it used to be. You know, even things like, you know, keep in mind when Vincent Arsenault still played in the queue, you know, it's not like fighting was up substantially, but it was up. What makes it impressive, though, the 100 plus minutes for four straight years at that time, I think it was probably around 2003 or thereabouts. The Q stopped counting 10-minute misconducts and game misconducts in the penalty minute totals. So for you to get to say, you know, even in an era when fighting was still up, for you to get to 200 after that happened, you had to be fighting pretty much every single night. And nowadays, you know, obviously, you know, if you make it to 100, that's really standing out. You know, part of it obviously is the misconduct part of things, but just a number of things that have changed in the landscape of the game. But that was Vincent Arsenault. You know, watching him for so many years in Bathurst with the Titan, you know, he was just a grindy. He's the type of player you hated to play against. You know, we just talked about Brad Marchand at length. Vincent Arsenault is another guy you hate to play against, but for different reasons. He was just going to grind you against the boards until you no longer want to go out there, basically. Yeah. If you're matched up against him, it was just going to be a pain in the neck all night long. And he was rewarded. He did win the Memorial Cup in 2012 after being traded to the Shawinigan Cataracts, and he's still hanging on today. He's not even hanging on. He's succeeding. He is you know, in a league that's very young. The AHL is not what it used to be. He would certainly be classified as a grizzled old veteran at this point, and he's making the most of that opportunity, and he's, you know, teaching this next generation, you know, the guys like Guillaume Brisebois to an extent, and the guys even far younger than Brisebois, you know, how to play in the pro ranks. Great to see him get some well-deserved playing time in Abbotsford and to be successful in the process. Only one guy in the NHL, but yeah, we kind of know this guy a little bit. Connor Garland. So back-to-back Q scoring titles in 2015, 2016. Four seasons in the Q, really about a little more than three and a half, really, because he came up partway through a 16-year-old season from the Boston area. And speaking of guys who the opposition fans love to hate, here comes another one.
Honestly, though, like, one of the best players I've ever seen in junior, legitimately. And, like, it's crazy to even think that someone, like, of that size could dominate games like that. It was just – and he always stood out. And I specifically remember why he stood out, because his jersey was almost down to, like, his ankles. It stood out so much. But just
like he was wearing it was like he was wearing honestly, a nightshirt.
Honestly, though. But, yeah, like, crazy – I'm honestly happy that he was able to carry that over into the NHL, because obviously when you have someone of that size who's putting up numbers like that in the queue, everyone says there's no way he's going to do that, bro. He's just a queue guy. So it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome to see that he had a really good AHL career and then carried that over to the NHL. I know he's had struggling a little bit this season in Vancouver, but just about everybody's struggling this season in Vancouver.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I remember when he came up, it was midway through his 16-year-old season. And that was a veteran Wildcats team. They were gunning for a President Cup that year. And he found a spot. He immediately came into the lineup. He was originally committed to Penn State, I believe, for like 2014. And he broke that commitment a couple years early to come to Moncton. And you could tell from the beginning that he was going to be a great Q player. But, you know, even, you know, people in and around Moncton, I know I was there the first, you know, couple of years he was in the league, it was still a case of, you know, he'll, like, what's he going to do? Is he going to go minor pro? Is he maybe even just going to play university? Like, what's in store for this guy? Could he actually play at a high level in the pro ranks? Yeah. And sure enough, you know, he made it impossible for organizations to not advance him. It happened in Phoenix with the Coyotes, who took a flyer on him in the NHL draft in like the mid to late rounds. And you couldn't keep him in the AHL. He made his way up from Tucson to Phoenix. And then, of course, he made his way from Phoenix to a sweet little free agency deal with the Vancouver Canucks. Yep. And, you know, and he earned everything that he got. Now, if you told me in December of 2012 that Connor Garland was A, going to be in the NHL, and B, be the Moncton Wildcats all-time point scoring leader, which he still is, I would have highly doubted you. And you know what? I, like virtually everybody else except for Connor Garland, was wrong about Connor Garland. So sometimes when you bet on yourself, good things happen.
Yep.
Our 2023... Very well said. Yeah. Thank you. Our 2023 draft prospect of the week. We're going to go to Chicoutimi for this one. We're going to talk about a guy who's had a sneaky good season for the Sags this year, Emmanuel Vermette, the left winger, second round pick in 2021, and really coming into his own with Yannick-Jean Sagnier.
Yeah, already surpassed his point total from last season, so 16 points. All of last year in 64 games, already has 20 points this season in just 24 games. So he's putting up great numbers this year. At least the Elite Prospects has him on pace for 52 points in 63 games. So that's really solid for a 17-year-old. He's been playing on Chicoutimi's first line most of the year, playing as a winger. And I know kind of projected to be a power forward entering the league. So maybe not that surprising that he kind of had a bit of a slower start offensively. We typically see that for those who are projected to kind of be the power forward type. But does have, or was supposed to have a good shot and some very quick hands. And we're starting to finally see that turn into points at the Q level.
Yeah, definitely. He's one of those guys who's kind of maturing on a pretty good trajectory. Not overly surprising. Usually the guys who come in as the power forwards, sometimes they do find their way a little bit quicker. Vermette is no exception. I haven't seen him this year, but I did see him last year down here in Halifax, and you could tell the tools are there. He was just, you know, kind of putting everything together last year, and now that is starting to take shape. The confidence, no doubt, has gone up, and playing for a guy like Yang Jian, getting plenty of opportunity to play on a very young Chicoutimi team, certainly is just the tonic that you'd think that Emmanuel Vermette's going to need. He's a C-rank prospect so far. We'll see how things pan out for him in future iterations of the CSR player to watch list. Let's quickly talk about the player of the week. And you can't talk about the player of the week without talking about the hottest team in the QMJHL. And that's the Victoriaville Dig and their goaltender, Nathan Darvaux, who went 2-0 on the week last week as Victoriaville came through the Maritimes for a rare four-game Maritime trip. They had a makeup game in Cape Breton that was canceled due to Hurricane Fiona back in the fall. They went 4-0, Jamie. They are points in 9 straight games. They are the 7th ranked team in the country. And Nathan Darvaux is just one of the reasons why that team has been on fire.
Yeah, it's not luck anymore. This team is extremely good to be where they are at. And if you're in the CHL top 10 in December, you're a very good team. And they're continuing to show that they're a very good team. So it's hard to even describe the season they're having. Like, this is just so surprising to see where they're at. And part of the reason they've been so good has been their goaltending. I think without question, the best goaltending combo in the league this season. And going into the year, if we had to pick one goalie that was going to be the talking point in for Victoriaville, is going to be Gabriel Dagg, the 16-year-old. But really, it's been Nathan Darvaux that has really stood out. Crazy numbers, 1.93 GAA and 942 save percentage. That is crazy.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. The Teague are consistently the toughest team in the league to score goals on night in and night out. They're right up with the top teams, obviously, in the first place in the Western Conference now. Once again, any other teams or surprises that you want to talk about? Are there other Hall of Fame candidates that you would like to throw the names in the ring for? And again, as far as the World Junior team goes, anybody from the queue that maybe an outsider in the eyes of many, but you think are going to make it, drop us a line. We'll get you on the mailbag. Our Twitter addresses are on the screen below. Jamie, that about wraps it up for us for this week. But just quickly, anything particular that stands out for you in the week ahead in the queue? What maybe strikes your eye?
A couple of Moosehead home games I'm keeping an eye on. Josh Lawrence makes his home debut on Thursday against his former team, which is an interesting setup. And then Gatineau visits Halifax on Saturday. That's a lot of star power, even though there will be a couple guys missing because of the World Junior camps, but still some big names.
Excellent. And and I will actually be there for both those games, so it'll be very interesting to see how the Lawrence versus his briefly former team pans out. And of course, Gatineau's always a good show when they make their way in. So that will wrap it up for us for yet another week. Again, if you have anything to send to us, it's at Will McRider or at @Station_Nation. Send it to us both. We'll both get it. We'll both talk about it. Until next week, for Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. Thank you for watching the Hockey News on the Cube, brought to you by BetMGM. We'll see you next time.